Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
So you're not happy? Well, maybe you need to join a union. How women have benefited with unions. And today on the show, Marty Walsh, our labor secretary on pensions, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and the carpenters in New York and New England. Welcome to the Friday, September 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Well, last couple of days, you heard me talking about Marty Walsh being on our Labor Day show. What we're going to do in a few minutes is give you a little preview. And in the segment that we're going to air, he talks about pensions and pension relief. You may recall in the American Rescue Plan, there was $86 billion set aside to help the multi-employer plans, and he's going to touch on that. And the full show, again, is going to be on Monday, which we will follow up with Terry O'Sullivan, General President of Laborers International. Our featured guest on the show today is Dorsey Hager, one of our regulars, also a sponsor. He comes to us from the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Columbus Construction. .org. And we'll talk about, this Delta variant, which is picking up steam in various states, including the state of Ohio, how workers are faring on the job. An unemployment claims clinic. Yeah, there's a lot of fear of unemployment picking up because of COVID. And you probably know this, our unemployment system in the state of Ohio, we're not alone in the state of Ohio. This is happening in various states. It's a mess. It's a mess. And the Labor Department is trying to throw some more money in it so they would upgrade those systems. We'll touch on that. Columbus, as you probably know by now, if you've been listening to Dorsey, has been on fire. And I'm talking about people moving there. The latest census shows that. We'll talk about that briefly. But this is resulting in a construction boom. Amazon, Google, Facebook. 52 data centers are being built in Columbus, which is great news for the IBEW. Talk about data, you talk about electronics. North Market Tower, 16 stories possible there. We're also going to touch on the election of Liz Shuler. Last month, it was a day after Rich Trumka passed away. And since then, Liz Shuler, who was in the number two slot, has moved up to be president. She'll have that position until June of next year. But she got a unanimous vote a couple of weeks ago from the AFL-CIO Executive Council, and Dorsey's going to share his thoughts on Liz Shuler. So he's going to be our first guest. Our second guest is Ian Williams, and Ian comes to us from the North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters. Website is nasrcc.org, and that's Local 277. They represent like seven states, thousands, and he'll give us a rundown of how many carpenters. He's a business agent for 277. We'll talk about training, apprenticeship, workforce needs. It's my understanding that they have a lot of positions available, and he's going to run down the Carpenters Apprenticeship Program. So a lot of good jobs available. You get the right training. Oh, my gosh, you can make a whole lot of money because so many areas are just building, and building. So he'll address that. Ian Williams, our second guest on the show. Well, what I want to do right now is play that little clip that's going to be in Monday's show. Pensions, retirement security is such an important issue for so many working men and women. And the multi-employer plans, for one, had to be bailed out. And our president and members of Congress did that some months back in the American Rescue Plan. That being said, I talked to Marty Walsh about pensions in America and the importance of having a good pension. Let's listen to this clip right here on America's Workforce.
Quite honestly, what that investment did was protect, you know, millions of workers' pensions as we move forward here. And I think that, you know, that was a good move by Congress and by the Senate to do that. It was very smart by the president to do that as well, because what we want to do is make sure that we preserve people's retirement as they move forward. And we're still working through the process there on the language around the pensions and making sure that the money's spent well and the money is invested well to make sure that we're protecting and making sure that we can stretch that money as far as we can to protect as many retirees' pensions moving forward here. In the language also calls for some reform in the system. So it was important, you know, coming as a laborer. I mean, I have time in the pension system in here in Massachusetts, and also when I worked for the Labor's Health and Welfare Funds, you know, people work their whole life with the understanding that when they retire, they're going to have a pension to fall back on. I often tell the old story of my own family. My father had a pension. He worked for over 35 years. He's a 50-year member of the Laborers Local 223 in Boston. And when he retired, he had his pension. And when he passed away, he took the option that my mother gets the pension. So, you know, that allows my mother to be able to, you know, move forward and keep a roof over her head. And obviously, we'd all help her. But the point is, some people don't have family. They have the pension. And some spouses just have the pension. So it's really, really important as we think about moving forward here. And quite honestly, I'm a strong supporter of pensions. As I mentioned earlier in the show, you know, I focused on in the city of Boston pension system to make sure that gets fully funded. There are too many older Americans working today in this country because they didn't have an opportunity to get a pension. So they're going to be working into their 70s and sometimes 80s. And that's unfair in a lot of ways. We should have a system that works for people that when they become retirement age and they have an opportunity, they shouldn't have to work one and two and three jobs to be able to continue to survive. And creating pensions and pensions is that way forward.
So once again, that's Marty Walsh. You'll hear the entire interview coming up Monday on America's Workforce. We got about 25 minutes with him, and he's really, really good. I mean, Marty talked about his beginnings at Local 223 in Boston, Massachusetts, when he was just like 21 years of age, and how he went up the ranks of the union, eventually becoming a state rep, mayor of Boston, and now labor secretary. It's the American dream, no doubt about that. Again, that's going to be on Monday. According to a new working paper from Danny Blanchflower and Alex Bryson, union members are now statistically happier than non-union workers. Don't you love that going into Labor Day? This reverses a decades-long trend of union workers reporting less job satisfaction than other employees. And the trend was usually justified through a variety of hypotheses, such as union members being more involved in the workplace, adversity, more up-to-date on negative workplace conditions, union membership increasing, job retention of dissatisfied employees, or union members feeling more comfortable criticizing their jobs. All that was factored in. The two researchers report that the increase in union job satisfaction coincides with an increase in union membership over the last couple of years. Union density is still pretty much the same, but the membership is still growing. Keep in mind, the population is also growing. And we'll get complete statistics on that at the beginning of 2022. In the meantime, we have another report, this one titled Stronger Together, Union Membership Boosts Women's Earnings and Economic Security. And this study shows that union membership pays significant dividends to women, including higher wages and a narrower wage gap between women and men. The brief also details how these benefits often mean the difference between making rent and housing insecurity for women and their families. Now, some of the highlights in this report: higher wages. Women covered by a union contract earn an average, this is average, $195 or 22.6% more per week the non-unionized women. Number two, narrower wage gaps. Women covered by a union contract earn 87.3 cents for every dollar paid to union men compared to non-unionized women who earn 82 cents for every dollar paid to non-unionized men. Less union power equals lower wages across the board. This is number three. In states with restrictions on the ability of unions to bargain on behalf of workers, so-called right-to-work states, wages are lower than in other states, regardless of gender and union membership status. Job safety is also an issue in those right-to-work states. And number four, making rent. The difference in the median pay for women covered by a union contract compared to non-unionized women translates to 81% of annual median rent costs nationally. In 43 states, at least half of the yearly average rent costs could be paid with the yearly union wage advantage. And in 12 states, the union wage advantage pays for a full year or more of average rent. How many times we've said unions lift all boats, and more studies certainly reflecting that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars. This guy's been with us a long time, Dorsey Hager, on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Website, real simple, columbusconstruction.org. Twitter handle is BuildCentralOH. Dorsey Hager, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today going into this Labor Day weekend?
We are doing great. Like you said, getting ready to head into a nice pool, barbecue, 3-day celebrating the fruits of our Labor Day weekend brought to us by our union brothers and sisters.
Boy, that means a lot. It really does. When you think about people that have an 8-hour day, paid time off, pensions, Social Security, I mean, these are all things that labor brothers and sisters fought and died for. I mean, over what, 150 years now, right?
Healthcare. Just got out of a meeting this afternoon with somebody, and we were talking about the importance of requiring contractors to provide the basic human decency as health care to their employees. And I thought, you know, when you're doing tough physical labor in the middle of a pandemic, health care is probably pretty important.
I would think so. Good point, because that's a really good segue here. especially with people working, trying to get back to normal. It's not easy with this Delta variant. But talk to me about what's happening in the field with your members, especially in the Columbus area, because I know, and I want to talk about this, Columbus is on fire in population growth. The census just came out, and I see your population grew by 118,000 during the past 10 years, while in the city of Cleveland, it went down by 24,000. So you got a lot of people in Columbus moving to Columbus. You got the university, the Ohio State University. You've got the community college. You got the, of course, it's state government and all that. But what about safety on the job? Let's start there. Safety is number one. What are you hearing?
So I've had a lot of outreach from general contractors and construction managers in the city and in the county asking my opinion of obviously vaccines, vaccine mandates, masks, stuff like that. Obviously, they ask me, I give them my personal opinion. I know this may be unpopular with some of our members and maybe some of your listeners, but, you know, I make no bones about it. You know, I'm vaccinated day one that I could get the vaccination. I burned up the internet line and tried to find a place. And I went to St. John Arena, historic St. John Arena here on the campus of the Ohio State University, about 2.5 miles from my office. And I stood in line wrapped around the arena in the rain and the cold for 2.5 hours and got my first shot and went back 3 weeks later and got my second. So I was right at the front of the line as soon as my age group was eligible. I'm not going to talk about what age group I'm in on the air, but I was right at the front of the line. I got it, was happy to get it. Several reasons. I think a lot of science and research has went into the vaccine. I think this is a way to get us out of this pandemic. Obviously, I don't want to get sick. I don't have any family members that have gotten COVID. I do have some friends that have gotten COVID, and I've had some close friends who've passed away from COVID, unfortunately, and I don't want to be one of those people. But I also think that the vaccine is a way for us to get back to normal somewhat, or maybe even a new normal. So these GCs, CMs have been reaching out to me, you know, asking about the building trade stance. We haven't taken a stance as of yet. I don't know if we will. But, I mean, it just seems like to me today in Columbus, the statewide numbers were released by the governor, 7,100 new COVID illnesses, 7,100 new cases today. You know, about 6 months ago, we were flipping out and it was 3,500. So we're more than double that. We're still in summer. We're still in warm weather. We haven't hit Labor Day yet. My fear is in October, November, when we have those 20-degree nights and 40 and 50-degree days, that this is going to get worse, especially as more and more people are bundling up inside. So I don't know what the end is. I spoke at an outreach event Saturday morning, and a bunch of, I'm going to say kids, but 18 to 35-year-old people who heard me talk about the benefits and wages and the work opportunities in the building trades, you know, one of the kids at the end said, hey, what about vaccine mandates? And I said, well, my personal opinion, not the opinion of the building trades, it's coming. If you're not vaccinated, there's going to be some job sites, unfortunately, you are not going to be able to step on, and that's going to limit your employment opportunities and the opportunities to provide for yourselves and your family. And two people in my in the hall that I was speaking at this outreach event got up and walked out. So that's what it seems like's happening. I don't know what's happening in Cleveland. I don't know what's happening in Parkersburg, Marietta, Cincinnati, Dayton, or around the state, but it seems like there's a lot of people here. Of course, all the healthcare systems have already went to it in Columbus and Central Ohio. We have a lot of members that are doing new construction, but also doing maintenance. Some of them have elected not to get the vaccine, so they're not working in some of these really nice maintenance jobs that they had at some of these different healthcare systems. The Ohio State University just mandated the vaccine for everybody on campus, I think beginning October 15th. So, you know, we have the OSU hospital that's broke ground already. It's starting to come out of the ground. It's going to be about a $2 billion project. At the height of that, we'll probably have about 2,300 workers on that job. Be interesting to see what happens there. I'm seeing that a lot of other state schools are starting to mandate the vaccine, Ohio University. We've got a couple school districts down here that, because of outbreaks, have closed until September 15th. Which is unfortunate because so many kids have gotten sick from either being unvaccinated or unvaccinated and not masking up. So I don't know. I hate to be the negative person leading into a beautiful 3-day weekend, but the outlook is not good, I don't think. The outlook is not good.
Well, that's the reality of it. I don't know if you heard what Delta Airlines did with their employees. They said, and they've given some incentives to get the vaccine, and some people, they went forward and did it, but not enough. So they told their employees, if you don't get vaccinated, your health premiums will go up $200 a month. Well, since they made that announcement, vaccinations have increased fivefold. So I don't know if more companies are going to go that route, but you know that when money starts coming out of your wallet, that's a different story. So we'll see what happens here. You mentioned you're kind of nervous. I know you wanted to talk about unemployment claims, and apparently there's an unemployment claims clinic that's taken hold there. Can you explain what's going on?
Yeah, so, you know, the building trades, especially since a lot of our new leadership took over 7 years ago, we try to do what we can to help our members and service our members. And our managers and agents are getting beat to death by some of their members, even now that have returned to work, that are being asked by the state and ODJFS to pay back past unemployment. So I sat down with our legal counsel, who recommended another attorney who deals just with unemployment claims. We sat down and we spoke for like an hour, and we discussed some of the things that are happening down at ODJFS. And I mean, this could be a full 1 hour show as it is, but you know, ODJFS was overwhelmed because people were laid off due to COVID. Some of them took voluntary layoffs. So you have a bunch of people at ODJFS that were working in an outdated, antiquated system that they didn't know how to use, the system that was being used anyway, plus the system was way too old and couldn't handle the caseload. Then you had people that were being transferred in to help ODJFS and unemployment compensation with these cases because of the overload, who didn't really have a full understanding, obviously, of what they were doing and stuff. So there's been a lot of mixed message and mixed communication. So we have members on our job sites now who went back to work, who maybe were on off during COVID, are being asked to pay back some of these claims. We have some members who are home with the children or parents who are immune compromised, who are saying now that they have to go back to work or they're going to lose their unemployment, or they got to pay back unemployment they've already received. So it's all very confusing and nobody really seems to have an answer. And if you talk down to unemployment and you talk to the basic, you know, the caseworker level, you may get a different answer out of several different caseworkers on one different claim. So we brought in a professional in. He did a clinic on a Saturday morning. He spent about an hour. He's going to work with individuals on their claims, on their appeals. It was very well received. It was very, very well attended. And it was so well attended that we're going to look at having him back the first week of October to do a class again, because I'm already getting phone calls from people who were on job. And of course, we opened it up to all 18,000 members of the Columbus Building Trades, but I'm already getting phone calls, email and text from members who said, hey, I work with John out here, and he said he came to your unemployment claim clinic and this attorney was able to help him. You know, do you have his information or can I visit with him? You know, and that's why we're deciding to do it again. So I'm hoping that the members are getting some help. I'm hoping that the managers, agents, and reps are getting a little relief, and I'm hoping that we can get this cleared up. And again, you know, segueing in from COVID and what we're seeing now with the cases, I'm hoping we turn the corner and we're coming out of this, but the data certainly does not reflect that. And I'm nervous about what holds in store for us in November, December, January, and February.
Dorsey, from what I've been reading, a lot of the problems with the unemployment system, and this is not just in the state of Ohio, a number of states have systems that are antiquated. And that needs to be updated. And I just had a story 2 days ago from the Labor Department on money that's going to be infused into various states to upgrade their system so we don't go through this again. Now, I don't know when that money is going to become available, but it's long overdue. There's no question about that, because these systems, I think they're like 20, maybe 30 years behind. And they were overloaded, too. And remember when we had the shutdown of March of 2020? Yeah. People didn't get their checks for like months, and that should not be the case. It's tragic when you take a look at that whole situation. So hopefully it'll be better times ahead down the road. Speaking of the Labor Department, I just have to let you know, you might want to be listening to Monday's show. I know you listen to the show as many times as you can. You're busy. You try to work it in, and that's the beauty of the podcast.
Absolutely.
We're going to have Marty Walsh on the show on Labor Day.
Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. A gentleman that was kind of a mentor to me was Bud McCourt. He just retired as international general president of the Insulators. And Bud and Marty came up together in Boston, obviously Boston roots. Always spoke highly of Marty. And Marty came and spoke about a year before he was appointed labor secretary. And he was talking about community benefit agreements, diversification, local hiring on workforce and stuff. And I sat down and had a great conversation with him about our Building Futures program, our outreach events and things that we were doing in the underserved community. And I tell you what, the guy took, I mean, was busy as heck, was meeting with a ton of people here in Columbus, took 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of his day to actually sit down, address some of the questions and concerns, some of the best practices that he used. Because as you know, before he was mayor of Boston, he was head of the building trades in Boston, and and just it was great sitting down and picking his brain and talking to him and stuff. And what a great guy, a guy that's very hardworking, but also progressive and cares about people. And I'm glad he's in the position he's in now. And I'm hoping that you know, I saw he spoke at the UA convention in San Diego this week, and I'm hoping that he can keep doing what he's doing. He has the ear of the president, which I know he does, and we can keep moving forward. I know you and I have talked about this on our on your show here in the past, but obviously in my generation, Joe Biden is by far and away the most pro-union president that we've ever had. And I hope that that, that track record and that course keeps continuing down the road.
Yeah, we talked about so many different things. We got into OSHA. He's going to try to trick that up, get more enforcement there. Pensions, you know, the multi-employer plans that were saved under the American Rescue Plan. Which happened actually before he took over the department, but it's all good stuff. That's going to be on Monday's show. So I'm glad you're sharing that with me. And I have to thank Terry O'Sullivan, General President of Laborers International, because they paved the way, because he started at Liuna Local 223 in Boston, going back to, I think it was like 1988 when he started. But it's a great story. And you know what? I got to take a break because we're going a little too long here. I want to get into good things happening there in Central Ohio, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and also we've got some new leadership in the AFL-CIO, Liz Schuler. We'll talk about that as well. Ian Williams will be joining us later in the show. Ian is with the North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, and that's Local 277. And he'll be talking about what he's doing, training, apprenticeship, all good stuff. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes Liuna to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of Liuna, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, Liuna members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by Liuna at liuna.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute. Sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. Five-star ratings are always appreciated. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Dorsey Hager, one of our regulars. on behalf of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Well, as I indicated in the first segment, Columbus is on fire. A lot of people moving into Central Ohio. A lot of development, building going on. Amazon, Google, Facebook. Give me the latest rundown. I'm getting jealous here. We got the Sherwin-Williams project in northeastern Ohio, which hasn't started yet. But that's going to be a big one. There's no doubt about that. But anyway, fill me in. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, don't be jealous because I was in Cleveland last weekend. I saw the Rangers and the Indians. So you guys got a lot going on there in Cleveland, too. I saw a lot of cranes, a lot of holes in the ground, which is cool. But, yeah, Columbus and Central Ohio is definitely exploding. You know, I meet with a lot of GCCMs, try to forecast the future. And obviously construction is perishable and it's also unpredictable, but the future looks well as it looks good as well. But Google just announced that they're looking at another $1.5 billion investment, a couple more data centers, one in New Albany, which is northeast of Columbus, and one in Lancaster, which is southeast of Columbus. So one in Licking County, one in Fairfield County, but those are adjacent counties to Franklin County. So you're talking 20, 25 minutes from downtown Columbus. So those are going to be incredible projects, huge jobs. The solar work obviously is still, you know, hasn't broke ground. It's still in the planning stages, but we're looking at a 5,000 acre solar field, Madison County, just west of the city, up near where I live, 25 minutes away from the city. We're looking at two solar projects, 2,400 and 3,600 acres each. So those will be nice. And just to put that in perspective, talking to Pat Hook, the IBW business manager, he said a 2,000-acre solar field probably would employ 100 to 125 electricians for 12 to 18 months. So a lot of work, very interesting. Amazon continues to be, you know, just crazy busy looking at land to purchase and acquiesce to build more and more data centers, which I think we have either completed or in the construction phase right now. Just in Central Ohio is 52. Google, I mentioned Google, Facebook still going strong out in New Albany. The Facebook campus is huge. We've got a lot of members out there, and that's an incredible project in support of Facebook and their data centers out there. And then one that's kind of been on the front page and kind of fell off, and now it looks like it's got some rejuvenated hope, and I've got a meeting after Labor Day about it, is this North Market Tower. So they're looking at putting a North Market Tower in. They're looking at 16 to 20 stories downtown Columbus. It'll have a little bit of condominium in it. It'll have some mixed use. It'll have a lot of different restaurants in it, just like the North Market does now. And it'll be a destination place for people there in Columbus to go and visit, get something to eat, maybe even a place for some people to settle down and live. But a lot of work in Columbus and Central Ohio, a lot of work. It's all coming up. Ohio State, which this was kind of like a blip on the radar, announced that they're building a lacrosse-only athletic stadium. So that's going to be interesting to see as that comes up, how much work is involved there for us. But just a ton of work coming up, a lot of good things happening.
Dorsey, if you don't mind, let's pick up on Amazon, because as you know, Amazon as a company does not want their workers to unionize. We saw how brutal it was in Bessemer, Alabama, and it's like that all over. No matter where there's an Amazon facility, they beat the union down. I know the Teamsters are organizing. They've got a very, very aggressive campaign going on right now. But when it comes to building the warehouses, the facilities, is that pretty much all union then? And is there any conflict? I mean, are they trying to go non-union on these projects or what?
I would say the data centers and the facilities right now in Columbus and Central Ohio market are 75 to 80% union. We see some of the things that are done that they will go low dollar and they'll just use the lowest dollar. But a lot of what's gone in the bidding process so far and what a lot of our managers, agents, and reps are doing is they're getting out, they're meeting with these folks, they're meeting with the GCs and the CMs that are building these facilities. And I think a lot of them are on time, on budget, done safely. And the biggest thing is on time. If they break ground on a data center and they want it fully operational in 12 months, then they have a much better chance of that happening when they go to the plumbers and fitters, the UA, when they go to the IBW, when they go to the iron workers, the insulators, the sheet metal workers, SMART. They have a much better chance of that happening because they know they're going to have a large range of contractors that are going to have an endless supply of manpower to be able to do that job to get it done on time and under budget. Whereas if you, you know, if you do a project with just one contractor, you're dependent on that contractor to find people. And I think that's where we have a competitive advantage right now. We're doing a lot recruiting, outreach, cultivating people, getting them interested in the trades, but also training the people that we currently have and getting them out as soon as we can. Whereas a single company on its own, you know, is going to have a hard time putting a one ad in the paper or something on a on an internet site to try to get people because the unemployment's so low. So I think that's played to our advantage, and I think we're using it well. But we haven't seen any animosity really from anybody down here in Central Ohio. Obviously, it's not as pro-labor as Cleveland or Toledo when it comes to terms of project labor agreements and stuff like that. But I think we're starting to turn that a little bit and starting to have some better conversations with that. But we're not seeing the animosity towards unions, because I think a lot of people realize that the building trades unions are a source, a partnership, and can help them get their projects done because, again, of our manpower situation. And as the unemployment level stays low, as we're still fighting our way out of a pandemic, there's a huge premium on skilled labor right now, and they know who it is that they need to go to use that skilled labor.
And I bring that up because I recall a story not long ago, like Walmart and companies like Disney, who are not what you call union friendly in the same category as Amazon. They insist on union labor when they're building a facility or they're adding on a Disney World. Because they know to what you just said, because they know it's going to be done right. I mean, it's real simple when it comes down to it.
One other thing I think falls into there real quick is cost certainty. Those are the conversations I have with Honda of America's cost certainty. They know that if they go into a contract with a Limbach or a Superior or a Kirk Williams and they're signed to a CBA, a collective bargaining agreement, they know that their costs are pretty much going to be, you know, in line for the next 2 or 3 years, the life of that CBA. Whereas if they bring in an outside open shop company to do some of their services, they're not going to have cost certainty, because obviously those people are going back to their contractors. They're hitting them up for raises. They're threatening to leave. They're trying to better their situation. And that throws the cost for that company out of whack. So that's another competitive advantage we have. Our contractors know today, tomorrow, 6 months, 12 months, sometimes as far as 36 and 48 months, what their costs are going to be and what type of manpower chain that they're going to be able to access. And I think that gives them a competitive advantage when they bid work.
Very good point. All right, one more thing here, and that is some leadership changes in the AFL-CIO. Last time you and I talked, it was the day after Rich Trumka suddenly passed away. Well, in the last couple of weeks, Liz Shuler, who was Secretary Treasurer, has been elected unanimously, I might add, by the Executive Council to continue Rich's work at least until next June. And I'd like to get your comments. She comes from the trades. She comes from the IBEW. What's your thoughts moving forward here?
Well, I don't know Liz personally, but I've read her resume and I've checked out her page and everything. And obviously coming from the IBEW, I think she understands the issues that face building trades people every day. And I think she understands the issues that face labor. I think it's going to be really interesting and really nice to have, a female leading the charge here. I think it does a lot to speak to how the unions are obviously becoming more inclusive and more diverse. And when you have somebody at the top of the AFL-CIO leading the charge and speaking that, I think that gives us a lot of credence and credibility. But one thing I do know about Liz, she's very passionate. She's very smart. She's very hardworking. You put those three things together, and I think she'll do well. You know, and you and I were talking off the air. She cut her teeth as an IBEW organizer for, I think it was Local 125. And to be an organizer, and then she did some lobbying for the IBEW too, you know that you got to have thick skin and you got to be, you know, been told no lots of times and hard worker and press forward. And I think she's well-suited, well-trained, and I think she's going to do an incredible job as the head of the AFL-CIO.
And she was with Rich from the beginning when Rich took over the presidency going back to 2009. She was Secretary Treasurer since then. So she's learned a lot from him. I'm looking for good things from Liz Shuler. All right, we're going into Labor Day weekend here, and I often ask my guests how they feel. I mean, what a big difference from last year. Oh, my gosh. What a big difference. We've got a pro-union guy in the White House. Marty Walsh, as I indicated, is going to be featured as a guest on our Labor Day show, a union guy in the Labor Department for the first time, I think, in a half a century. Things are happening, a lot of organizing going on. I just want to hear from Dorsey Hager, kind of salute to the brothers and sisters out there as we go into this very, very celebratory weekend. Go ahead.
I just want to salute the men and women of the building trades, all building trades, the national building trades, the state building trades, Columbus Central Ohio building trades, our 18,000 members, our men and women, white, black, brown, African-American, Latino, come from all walks of life, you know, some college graduates, some high school graduates that have go out and every day they strap on the tools, they put on the hard hat, and they bust their butt to make sure that what they do makes money for their contractor, represents their union, their family, and their community well, and that they provide for their family, and they also provide for their community because they're an asset to their community, because they're making a good wage that they can spend in their community, support their local businesses, but they're also not a burden on the taxpayers of this community or the taxpayers of this state because they have a union-negotiated healthcare plan, pension, and annuity, which means they're going to have a great career, they're going to be able to leave and live a great life, and they're going to be able to retire with dignity and respect and be able to do what they want without being a burden on anybody else. So that's what I want to say. I want to salute all those guys, whether they're climbing iron, whether they're wrapping pipe, whether they're welding, whether they're installing electric panels, digging ditches, moving ground, building our roads and highways, our office buildings, our churches, our hospitals, and then also on the weekends taking time to you know, volunteer in their churches, their local youth groups, and coach their kids' soccer and baseball teams. I want to say hats off to them, and it's in a well-deserved, like we started the show, three-day weekend brought to us by our brothers and sisters in organized labor, and I hope they just have a great weekend.
I love what you just said, my man. You are the best. You are the best. Dorsey Hager, Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Find more at columbusconstruction.org. You take care. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Sounds good. One last thing. 9 days. Let's go, Browns. Beat the Chiefs. Football season is almost here.
I hear you, brother. Take care. We'll talk to you next month, buddy.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Ian Williams is with the North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Vision loss is not something that you feel until it happens.
Most people lose their vision from diseases like macular degeneration and glaucoma, not at birth.
3 million Americans have glaucoma, and half don't even know it.
11 million people in the United States have macular degeneration.
So many eye disorders can be treated if caught early.
Make a plan today to get your eyes checked.
Visit brightfocus.org to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, and you can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number two right now and welcome a newcomer to the show. His name is Ian Williams. He's a business agent for Local 277, and he represents, well, he's a council rep for the North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters. Website is nasrcc.org. And this is a pretty large group here. We're talking seven states. And what is it? In 277, is it 2,700 people? Fill in the blanks here, Ian, and welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, 30,000 carpenters council-wide and 2,700 carpenters within Local 277 covering Central New York.
Now, as far as the council, how many? I mentioned the seven states. What states are we talking about here?
You're going to make me rattle them all off. Okay, so all of New York State besides New York City, and then you have Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, of course, Connecticut, and Long Island. Did I get them all?
It sounds like you got them all to me.
I think I'm trying to count on my fingers and without repeating any.
Well, I take it your job requires a lot of traveling, does it not?
It does, indeed. I get around quite a bit.
So talk to me about the council, and I'm hearing good things from various trades on the work that's going on. What's the latest in that area?
We are actually booming in upstate New York, central New York especially, right across the council. Work is very heavy. We've taken on, actually, and I can only really – I didn't really do all my homework on my numbers, but I can speak specifically for New York, Central New York especially. We have a few billion dollars in work going on right now, and we have over 200 new members since the beginning of this year, and 108 of them actually being new apprentices. So we are growing rapidly. Our membership is doing very well. The amount of work that we have is excellent. And it's just, even throughout the pandemic and everything that's going on right now, the construction industry is doing very well.
Well, yeah, you were labeled essential workers, so you worked right through the pandemic. Yeah, that makes a big difference right there. You mentioned the workload. Do we have projections? I mean, it's hot now, and you know how it goes. There's ups and downs in just about every occupation out there. But what are the projections for that area of the country?
I would say the projections look, the outlook is very, very good. You got the new infrastructure bill coming out. We're looking at, you know, millions, potentially billions of dollars in infrastructure work. And we have quite a few PLAs, you know, project labor agreements going on in Central New York right now and across the council. I don't see it dying off anytime soon. And I hope it doesn't, because, you know, it's never a good thing when you take on that many new workers, members, and then have things die off quickly and have, the economy crash, housing market crash, things like that happen. And to have that many people out of work, just like what happened with the pandemic, is just devastating. So, but the outlook, I would say, at the moment is very good.
Well, you talked about the apprenticeship program. I want to get into a little more detail there, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Maybe you could tell us as far as the components of the program, how long it goes, and how you're getting people involved in the trades. And I've had this conversation with so many people like yourself, where sometimes you got to drag them kicking and screaming. You know, a lot of kids say, I want to go to college. I'm going to be a computer programmer. Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then they get out of college. Sometimes they drop out. Sometimes they do 4 years, and they don't have a job at the end of those 4 years. So I'm just wondering, let's talk about your outreach. Let's start right there.
Yeah, sure. Our program specifically is it's a five-level program. And it's scheduled to be completed in 4 years. And it is a college-credited program, so they do get credits towards degrees that they can complete moving forward when they graduate to journey level. What you're talking about as far as getting people into our program and actually finding people that want to do this kind of work, since for years and years it's been going on that, you know, college has been the primary push from their home schools. all the high schools, and it is tough. We do a lot of advertising. Of course, we're very in depth into social media now, trying to ride that train and get our outreach out the best we can. We've gone as far as trying to get bulletin boards and stuff like that, banners, flyers. I mean, we're all over the place as far as organizing and recruitment, trying to get people to come into this apprentice program. And we've actually been very fortunate, over the past few years, we have had quite the influx. And of course, similar to colleges, there's an expected dropout rate. But we try to vet the people the best that we can and make sure that this is the right career for them, so that our retention is a little bit better and we're not wasting their time. They're not wasting ours. And, we're not steering them down a road where, a couple years down the road, it's been wasted time. That's, never a good feeling for anybody. But there's a lot of components to it. It's a very, it's tough, especially for myself. I handle the apprenticeship in the southern tier area of our local, and it's very extreme. Getting into the spring and summer months with as busy as we have been, like I said, the work's been very good, so we have billions of dollars going on just in work just in central New York and trying to man jobs but make sure we're getting the right people instead of just shoving whoever we can get to fill jobs. It's a balancing act.
Yeah. Boy, you have to know a whole lot about the lumber industry being a carpenter. And I saw the prices. Jesus, what'd they go up like 400% because everybody was deciding to remodel their homes? How did you navigate through that?
I haven't had to deal with it so much. Our contractors and trying to help our contractors out the best we can. The numbers have been insane. They're finally starting to come down, but it seems like, even with the jacked up prices and the increases, people are still spending money and they're still building. So it hasn't seemed to really hurt us as much. On the other end, from the contractor's perspective, where some of them have been hurt is they put bids in, last year or the year before previously for upcoming projects and bid them at the current prices of materials. And then if they got stuck with a contract and a project and the owner, developer, whoever it was, refuses to go back and allow them to rebid it, at the current lumber prices, then they take that hit. Mm-hmm. And that can be pretty significant.
Oh, I know a lot of contractors try to wiggle out of those contracts. Yeah, it was a tough time. But
yeah.
Yeah, but to your point, things seem to be settling down a bit. How's everybody doing with the vaccine? There's mandates going on right now. What are you hearing from the members right now, Ian?
It's both sides of it, and you see a lot of it on social media just as much, and it's going through and reading everybody's comments and hearing everybody's arguments. It's a lot to take in. And I understand both sides. There's a lot of worry from certain members, and other members are very much for it and trying to encourage other members to get it done, to be safe for their brother and sister members and their families at home. And those are always difficult conversations to have, no doubt about it.
Yeah. No, the job doesn't get any easier, no doubt about that.
No, absolutely not.
All right, Ian. Anything else here? I'm going to have to button it up here, but any parting words here for our audience?
No, I don't think so. Just stay strong out there and everybody take care of yourselves.
You got it. Ian, I'm going to have to button it up here. I want to drive people to your website. That's NASRCC.org. That's the North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters. Local 277. Well, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, our Labor Day show, is the Labor Secretary himself, Mr. Marty Walsh, and we'll follow him with Terry O'Sullivan, General President of our presenting sponsor. That's LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful holiday.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.